Okay, we're good? All right. All right. So, we have changed the background. But before we start, again, I just want to thank you guys for being cornerstones of the Maker community. You guys are really...
just us?
The Mount Rushmore should be you guys up there.
Oh, man.
Thank you. You guys have been doing it longer than most, and truly, each one of you brings a different dynamic and a different skill set and a different way of inspiring each person to build stuff. And I want to thank you personally, and if everyone could just give you guys a round of applause, seriously, for what you, all of you have done is remarkable. And it really has changed a lot of people's lives in the best way.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Are we ready to roll?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
I want to say first, thank you, Graz, and thank you, Carolina.
Absolutely.
Thank
you all for making the trip. Whether I know some people are like down the street, some people are from the other side of the country. Anybody showing up to spend time with us and to to bring their creations. This has been amazing. And so thank you to each one.
I think maybe I'm speaking for myself alone, but there's a little imposter syndrome. Like, you guys would all come out for us.
100%.
Like, why are you guys here for us? Because we did what?
For imposter syndrome, do you remember when I had like probably 7 followers on my YouTube channel, and for some reason Gareth let me sit with you guys on a Maker Faire thing, and I was like... Why am I up here? Hi. That was the most imposter syndrome of all time. I was just like, hi, I'm here too. But anyway, so I just pulled the first question. And the first question, I don't know, were we supposed to write our names? But first question is, what advice would you give to newer makers?
Just make something all the time. That's basically it. If you're trying to create social media, post a little bit, get past your shyness, post a lot, post often, and try and post something interesting. And I would say make something every single day.
I think we're doing kind of rapid fire on these. We're just going to run through them. I think mine would be, we've talked about this before with video specifically, but I think it's the same with anything. Make the first one without the intention of it being...
That's a good point.
...for anybody else. If you're wanting to make videos, it's a good example. Make the first one knowing that you will never show it to anybody. And then if it's good enough, you can show it to somebody. But if you're not planning on it, then the bar that you have to meet doesn't exist, which means you can do it and do it wrong. And it doesn't matter because there's nothing at stake. And you learn all the things that you earn, learn enough to be able to then make another one that is more informed and worthy of showing to other people.
Stop watching YouTube videos.
Amen.
And stop comparing yourself to other people and just do the thing. Just make it.
Yeah. It's going to be the only feed we have of the whole thing.
It will have a nice rolling cart shot. It's beautiful.
All right. That is very good advice. The next question is, this might hit a little deep. What is your biggest failure and what did you do to change it?
Dave, go first.
Yeah, Dave, go first.
Only because I don't have a good answer.
As far as failure for me, that is a really, really hard question to answer. I think I could look at, so anybody that doesn't know, I had a team of people working with me. We had an office building. We bought a building and had a lot of stuff going on there. And the market changed and plans did not work out. And a lot of that just fell apart. And I can look back at that from one perspective. I could look back at that as, my friends had to find new jobs and the plans that I was making just didn't work out. And I could see that as a failure very, very easily. And I felt that as a failure for a long time. On the flip side of that, that experience for me had a profound effect on me understanding who I am and what I'm for. And what I'm supposed to do. And so I think, I'm not getting upset, but my throat is closing up. So I can look at that as a failure, or I can look at it as it was something that I thought I was headed towards, and it didn't work out that way, but it led me to understand a lot more about myself and what I'm supposed to be doing. And 100% good came out of something that I thought was a complete failure. And yeah, I guess that's... enough.
Similarly, my brother Joseph and I had a toy production company where we would do toy production behind the scenes. We'd develop packaging, prototypes, sales samples, even inventions was a big part of it. So people would give us categories to think in and we'd ideate on those categories. And the business changed a little bit and so did our income. And then my brother said, come upstairs. He had the office upstairs. I had the workshop downstairs. He says, we have 1 month's rent and we're a year away from finishing this lease. I spoke to the landlord and he says if we can get out in the next 6 weeks, he won't hold us to the lease. He goes, we have to get out. And I said, okay. And right there, without any serious emotional attachment to what we just put together for five previous years, we pivoted and we changed. And instead of holding on and getting dragged, my friend Rachel says, don't get dragged, let go and move on. And we did at that time. And obviously my life changed. I didn't get stuck in the toy business. I mean, things would have changed in another way or shape. But the idea of what you just gave me that example is, you know, let go and move forward and learn from your mistakes. So I wouldn't say that was the greatest failure in my life. I don't even know if I have what I would consider anything as a greatest failure. But that was the one thing where everybody expected me to be doing this. And then in a moment's notice with the conversation with my brother, he's like, we got to pivot. I don't know what that means, but we have to leave this premises now. And we opened the front door. It was a garage door. And we decided, we did a hard edit. We pushed all of our toys and some of our materials to the front. And if anybody knows Manhattan, especially downtown in the East Village, there's artists and kids, they'll take anything. Within minutes, within days, 50% of the volume of junk we had was just into the ether.
And the people who took the stuff can quote you and said, found on the streets of New York.
Found on the streets. Just gave it back to the streets of New York.
So another thought on that, on failure in general. There's a well-known maker who always says failure is always an option. And I disagree with the definition of failure that he uses a lot of time, just in principle. I think failure is when you decide to give up. Because if you do something and it doesn't go the way that you want, it's not a failure. I mean, like the whole Edison thing where he found 100 ways not to make a light bulb or whatever it was. If it doesn't go the way that you want and you don't give up and you decide to do it again, you haven't failed at it, right? So in my mind, that failure is a decision that you're done. And you are 100% in charge, usually, of when that decision is made. So as long as you can decide that you're not done yet, then you're not at the point of failure yet, and you can pivot. You can change your mind. You can change your goal. You can just keep at it. And I think, you know, I think people who are looked at a lot, like you all know who I'm talking about, this guy that has a lot of attention and is very wise in a lot of things, I think a lot of times that you can look at somebody who's very visible and you can take the wrong thing from what they're saying. And failure is always an option, I think, is the wrong way to look at it, in my opinion. Granted, that's just my opinion. But I want you to be encouraged that failure is a decision. And you don't have to decide to fail. You can decide to continue on and to iterate and to do better and to whatever.
That's good. Well said.
I just want to say that I am not only a member of the Making a Podcast, but I'm also a listener. Like, I love hearing your guys' answers because it's therapy for me and it helps me. I'm not very good at putting my thoughts and feelings into words. And I'm like, oh, man, you guys just say it perfectly. And like, I'm listening to the podcast right now.
Thanks, Dave.
So this is a much lighter and actually this is a super fun question. So you get to revive a historical figure to collaborate with. Who is it and what do you make with them?
Leonardo da Vinci. We make a helicopter, but I won't fly.
Okay,
I'll let him fly. Take his place.
Very nice of you. Man, that's like, that could be a whole episode. Let's say Tesla, and we're going to make the first 3D printer. I want to see what Tesla would make if you gave him the idea of a 3D printer.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding.
By the way, for the young kids, he's talking about Nikita Tesla.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Elon Musk.
Nikolai
you give
Tesla.
A car a 3D printer and see what happens.
I think I'm so inspired by Ray and Charles Eames, by the work that they did, not only their design skills, but their innovation skills. I would just love to be in the same room and hear the thought process on some of the things that they made.
Interesting. That's a very, very interesting.
I want to change my answer.
Too late.
No, I would love to be a student of Michelangelo while he was carving stone.
So you're just picking all Ninja Turtles.
That's it.
That's good. What about Splinter?
Why aren't you doing stand-up?
That's very good. So this is another fun question. What do you admire most about each other? Skills, personality, friendship, etc.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Okay.
Yeah, David,
I love.
Take your time.
I love that Jimmy doesn't think about starting a project. Jimmy just starts a project, no matter how big. And I really admire that. You just dive right in, and you'll figure it out on the along the way. And I love Bob's opposite approach to that, where Bob likes to, in my opinion, likes to think things out a little bit, to analyze and see how it's going to work and make sure all the pieces are going to fit. And both approaches work for them. And I just love the two different ways that you guys approach a project.
I could say things that I'm jealous of. I'm jealous that they both know how to use Fusion 360. And they have this like if you notice in the podcast, when they start talking about stuff, I just sit there and I start like checking my Instagram.
Yeah, you can see the reflection of his phone in his glasses, in case you're ever wondering.
They start talking about it, and I just say, I wish I could contribute. God, I got to start working on Fusion 360. And I lost my thought. But, Bob's technical acuity with Arduino and programming, and Dave's stick-to-itiveness with your sense of style. I see, when Dave puts out a project, I'm like, oh, that's a Dave project. I sometimes think that my whole career looks like it's been spit through a blender. That's just my own impression of my own stuff. I know we all have a footprint, no matter what we do. But when I see Dave's work, I'm like, oh, beautiful.
So I have a follow-up question.
I haven't answered yet.
Sorry?
I haven't answered.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think for me, it's, and we've talked about this many times in the show, is the fact that these guys are unapologetically artistic. And both of them embrace the fact that they are artists, that they want to be artists, that they see themselves that way, and they pursue art for the sake of art. And I went to art school, and I have a degree in art, and I don't feel like I'm an artist. I just have a different way of looking at what I do and what I want to put out. I don't see that as a bad thing, but I do really appreciate the fact that they decided at some point in their lives they are artists, and they live like artists, and they make like artists, and they talk like artists, and they are artists. And I think that's really, really cool to commit to, because I've never been able to commit to it. Okay, Grass.
Sorry. So the way you kind of describe each other's personalities, I'm visualizing like when you're playing a video game and you pick a character and their traits go up and down and stuff like that. Now, I guess, I hope this isn't, I hope you guys don't start fighting, but I know you guys have tried to start projects collectively over the years. Do you think because of all of your different personalities, that is a different, it's a harder way to collaborate, or is that just because of like time and space between
I think it's time and space.
I think it's just time and space.
I think you don't want like-minded people making the same thing. You want three different personalities so everybody has their input. It's just time and space.
Yeah, because
it's just logistics, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, I totally agree. We all three have similar but different businesses. We all have very different ideas of what we want to create on a regular basis. And just trying to get all those things to line up enough to do one thing together, the podcast, it's pretty amazing. And so trying to do something that requires shop time and, you know, a different level of collaboration than the podcast, I think it's just logistics.
Like I said, the reason we keep showing up for the podcast is because we're all too polite to quit. Each one of us is like, oh, okay. Oh, hey, what's up, guys? We all showed up.
We're there early, and we're like hanging out. We're like, cool, I cannot wait to do this. Yeah. And then Jimmy pops in, and he's like, oh, cool, you're here. Good.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This is a quick photo. Will all three of you do photos with people afterwards?
Of course.
Of course.
All right. Absolutely.
This is... How quickly after meeting Jimmy did Dave and Bob realize that he can build slash fix anything?
I realized that before I met Jimmy.
Yeah.
When I first started doing YouTube stuff, I think his were some of the first kind of maker videos that I found pretty early on. And it was, you know, swinging from some sort of woodworking thing into like blacksmithing and all this stuff that I just was way out of my scope. And so I knew early on that this is a guy that can do pretty much anything, so I should ask him some questions. And I think that's how we met, as I sent you an email asking you some, I don't even remember what I asked you.
I talked about some of the podcasts. The very first email I got from Bob, I had just kind of started working with Make Magazine on a consistent level, and Bob's branding was in his email, and I thought that it was another corporation of making. I thought it was like another, like a competitor, but an alliance with Make Magazine. And I was like, oh, cool. I mean, I guess maybe I'll do videos for his corporation too. That's what I was thinking about. And I was like, we got to know each other. And it's a guy with a cool logo that works on his back porch alone. That's. I was like, totally the importance of branding has just been personified in the fact that I thought Bob was a corporation and that he might not even be the owner of it. He's just like a guy that works there. And that's branding because of his logo. You all know Bob's logo.
Well, I was a fan of Jimmy before we met, so I was already enjoying your work. And then you stole one of my video ideas for your own.
I've told this story many times. I did a video, I made a stool, and then I went, I was like, let me just see if, because it was in the beginning days when we were all kind of like, there really wasn't a plethora of videos out there. So I did a quick search, and Dave, who I'd been following his weekly wrap-up, which was one of my favorite shows, that's how I learned about a lot of other people in the community, and honestly, I was so proud when you finally put me on the weekly wrap-up. I really felt like I was like, yes, he picked me. But anyway, Dave had made a stool similar to mine. I just said, hey, this is parallel thinking. And you go, dude, it doesn't even matter. I love you. That was
similar?
It.
Was it similar or was it exactly the same that he made of yours?
Yeah.
Which one came out first? We should figure that out.
Yours was out first.
Mine came out first.
Yeah, okay. He
but
it off.
We I both copied. Just used templated router templates, I believe, to make a stool. Yeah.
Yep.
And I believe... when we met, because you were like, hey, you do this weekly wrap-up show. I don't know if I fit on here, but you should check me out. And I was just like, oh, my goodness. Yes, you belong in the show. And
which
here we are.
Showed my channel to a lot of people for the first time. That was huge for me as well. I mean, I had the same feeling that he had. It was like, oh, it's like validation. Like, I'm in the top 10, you know?
Right.
It was super cool.
This is a quick question for Jimmy. Jimmy. Did you ever recover your stolen trailer?
No, I never did. It's still missing. I keep the title in my car for that one day when I'm in Home Depot parking lot, I walk up and I go, aha, that's mine. Because the VIN number is usually right in this inconspicuous spot. If you don't know, the VIN number is right prominent top, but it's usually covered by paint. So it's hard to know. If you don't know, you don't know.
And how many spray-painted last name logos are on the trailer too?
Well, it's funny. There was so many spray-painted logos when I Google, and I was Googling up on Craigslist at the time because Facebook wasn't a big thing yet. I would Google Duresta trailer, thinking that the Yahoo that stole it might think it was a Duresta branded trailer. Didn't work. I haven't found it yet. I still, every once in a while, when I'm done looking for antique cars and Cadillacs I can't afford, I do trailer search just to see if my trailer's on there.
So, quick math question. How many bandsaws do you guys collectively have, all three of you?
I have about 18. 19, 20.
Really?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple outside if you want to grab a couple more.
If you count the handheld metal cutters, I have about
45.
18, 19. 18, 19. I gave one away, so now it's 17. Gave one away today.
That is...
He'll pick one up on the way back to New York.
Yeah, just grab the three that are outside so you can re-up them. Someone asks, why should I go to Maker Camp?
Maker Camp is a very hands-on physical experience. Who's been to Maker Camp by a show of hands? Who wants to go to Maker Camp by a show of hands? All right. Maker Camp is a hands-on experience. It's physical. It's cold out. There's leaves blowing. You got to bundle up. It's a bonding experience. The Maker Camp itself is the Blackthorn Resort, which is a little run down. It hasn't been upgraded.
You're not a good salesman, are you?
No. You got to hear me out. The bonding experience is as you get your room, you go, my room smells like diesel. No way. I turned the shower on in mine and the shower head shot out of the wall. Like, everybody's topping each other's with the stories. Huh. And Austin knows when you go there, you could either book an A, B, C, D, or camping room. That's like, and there's only like three A rooms.
I remember Dave Gagne, he had a room and he was like, yeah, I looked up and the whole light fixture was full of ladybugs. So that added a little ambiance to my room.
I did want to go to Mega Camp, but now.
No, well, obviously, a lot of guys will send a trailer there. There's a company that will send a trailer. There's plenty of room for travel trailers. So they'll send a trailer there that you can, it's kind of like a Burning Man thing, where you get there, your trailer's there. So you have your own private trailer. Or you could get an Airbnb. There's plenty of Airbnbs in the Wyndham, Hunter, Prattsville. There's all kind of towns around East Durham. A lot of Airbnbs. And there are a couple of guys that consecutively book the same house that has 7 or 8 bedrooms. So if any of those guys are here, you could... You know, so you'd be like, hey, I got the whole house. If you want one of the bedrooms, just chip in. There's a lot of that, too.
So, would you recommend starting a YouTube channel in 2025?
I would say yes if you want to build an online portfolio. And that's, I think, is the most important reason to do it, not necessarily for the money. I mean, how many of us have gotten a message? It's like, hey, I got a YouTube channel. I just hit 100 subscribers. How do I make money? You don't make money. I don't even think I made any money until I was at 100,000 plus subscribers.
So. I would say, yeah, I agree with that. In 2025, I don't think YouTube as a... To pursue YouTube as a career, I don't think is a wise thing. I don't think you... Doesn't mean you can't do it. But I think when we got started... Well, I'll say when we got started because you're way older. when we got started...
They said you're a bit older.
Yeah. When we got started, there was a lot of potential, you know, there was a lot of runway in it being a career, and I think now it's just a very different landscape. So doing it for the marketing, like he's saying, in a way to have a portfolio, in a way to build a community and stuff, 100%, definitely. But I think if your goal is to just like, I want to make videos and have those videos pay for my life, I think that's a lot harder to do than when we got started. So my recommendation would be to build a business that you want that can take care of your life, and then make videos about that business or make videos about what you make as a marketing tool rather than a revenue source.
Or even as just an online journal, too, is really important. Like when I look back at videos, so now VOOV, V-O-O-V, is a company that farms our videos and puts them on Facebook. Every once in a while, I open Facebook, I'm like, what the hell is this guy making? I'm like, oh, that's me with black hair making something. 2012. Oh, that's cool. So I've lived long enough to see my portfolio come back to me and be like, hey, remember you did this? I'm like, I don't remember what I did next. I'm like, oh, where is that tool? And then I'm like, oh, it's under the table. You know, it's really nice to have that trajectory of your career in film.
I say make videos if you want to make videos. I love the art form of making videos, and I hope that shows through. I put a lot of effort into... Thank you.
Yep.
I put a lot of effort into the framing and how things are shot and how I'm trying to get better at storytelling. And so I love making videos probably more than the woodworking itself. So if you want to make videos, just make them.
Learning new skills, what drives it?
Adding to my skill set, skill building is definitely something I enjoy doing, learning things that are new. Also giving a variety to my audience, what's left of it, you guys, basically. No, adding to my skill set is important to me to be able to collaborate skills as well, combine skills. So it's important. It's also mental exercise. It's therapy. Learning something new and never feeling like you've plateaued.
I think for me, I've always really enjoyed doing a lot of different types of things. And I thought for a while that was like you hear the jack of all trades thing. I thought that was part of me actually wanted to have a decent ability in a bunch of different things. And I think what I learned about myself is that I really like to solve problems. I like to find problems, identify them, figure out what the parts are, and I like to figure out a solution, even if it's just for me. And the best way to be equipped to solve a huge number of problems is to have a huge number of just basic skills. So I think for me in learning skills, it's about preparation. It's about, you know, being able to, when I run into this thing where I need to be able to X, I have at least a base knowledge in how to X. So I think that's more of the reason I want to learn it, not because I want to necessarily be great at it or I want to show it off to anybody. It's like preparation.
I think I'm just addicted to learning new things. I always want to learn something new, and I think that keeps me young. I just turned 50, but I don't feel 50 because I'm still feels like I'm in school every day. And that's the great thing about YouTube and all these, there's so many online courses that you can take now. You can dive into a skill that you couldn't do without taking like a physical class many years ago. Never stop learning.
I have to say that I think I'm super grateful that the three of us get to do this together for what we just said. Learning something, that simple idea, the three of us have very, very different reasons for learning things constantly. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because if you were to have each person in this room answer that same question, you know, there would be some overlap, but there's a lot of other reasons why you would want to invest yourself into learning a new skill. And I think, like, I'm just really grateful that I get to be a part of this community who is like-minded but also diverse. And I'm really glad that I get to do this with these guys for the exact same reason, because their answers are always not my answers, but it's like, oh yeah, that's a really good point. I should think that way too. So, yeah.
So this might, again, this is kind of bringing back to kind of failure. What is your most frustrating project? Everyone just went,
Bob,
David.
A couple of years ago, I went to make a coffee mug out of wood. And I thought it was going to be so simple. And it was just going to be like, we're going to do a quick one-day project. And I actually had to stop in the middle of the project and call it quits. Like, you know, I've got a saw stop table saw. I think the trigger on the saw stop went off a couple of times. We broke a bandsaw blade. I can't remember. The chuck on my drill bent for some odd reason. And everything was just going wrong. And I just decided to call it a day. And I've never done that for any project ever. I did revisit it like a year later and succeeded, and I should have, because it was just a simple, stupid coffee mug. But it was so frustrating. And we were actually, my brother was with me, and we had to go to the local woodcraft to go get a new blade so we could finish the project. And on the way there, I just said, you know what? Something in the universe is telling me to stop. I'm going to hurt myself. I'm going to be in the wrong mindset. So we just called it quits and made that the video.
What was the question?
Most frustrating.
Most frustrating. 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 That's right. So a few years back, 2019, I redid our master bathroom, and it was like full gut of the bathroom down to just bare walls. We moved the toilet and changed the shower and added the tub, and it was like a big deal. And we started it in, I think it was like December 19th. So right before Christmas, terrible time to start a project like that. But there was a deadline, we had a sponsor and all the stuff. And so it was a lot of fun tearing it out, you know, like, so, you know, you demo everything and you get it all ripped out. And then the effort of completely doing a bathroom from scratch in 0 degree weather, where you have to cut tile outside all the time, I just ran into thing after thing. I would go out and cut, and the entire room is tile. Like, it's just a stupid amount of tile. So I would go outside to cut tile, and the water in the saw would be a frozen sheet of ice, and I would have to break it up to get the pump to run to put water on the blade to cut the tile, every single tile. And it was literally 0 degrees, so every time I would go out, it would have refrozen, and you know, my hands were all jacked up and everything. And so there was a frustration and a time crunch there, but then also that led to the whole thing being behind schedule. And like I said, there was a sponsor. So then I had to have other people that I was working with come in and help do certain things off camera, laying tile and grouting. And immediately the pressure of having to get it done, requiring other people to do something for your own bathroom, which they don't have to live in, leads to not ideal work sometimes. So there are several things in this bathroom that I use every single day that I look at and I go like I would have done that different, or I made a mistake here, like that was my fault. I didn't think about it when I was doing this and that. And so it was a huge amount of work, and the frustration is every day since then. Because frustration in the moment, sure, that's fine, it passes. But, you know, the fact that it's not what it could have been for many reasons, most of which are my fault, it was just, it's irritating.
The project that comes to mind is I did several total boat projects with resin. And if you've never worked with resin, one important thing, especially if you're putting an animal or an object that is porous to resin, is you need to seal
it. You can't just say that without context.
You need to seal it. Even if it's a dried rat.
You know how you like
you're making it
Rachel,
worse.
Rachel and I keep walking past this rat. Anybody see the rat in the parking lot at the Hilton? Just me? We got one in the back. I think Mark's on the scene.
Now you're talking about Splinter with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I put dried mummified animals in resin, and if you don't seal them, they'll foam. How about this?
Don't look at me.
Remember this?
the Italian rat.
You know, how's that animal's leak?
Yeah, so that's, I made this curio table, and I think the successful version, I think I gave it to Total Boat. Is there one at Total Boat?
Yeah, is it
one
Total
of my
Boat
curio
Miles?
Tables? With like, so I made the first version of that, and I put some mementos in it that I was like, well, I'm gonna give this away. Like, I let go of these mementos, including this dried mouse that I taxidermied myself. I taxidermied this mouse at, what was
that? I want to tell that story. You just go on. Finish this story.
I taxidermied a mouse at this like Google like mind sweep event that we went to. I can't remember the name of it. And I put that mouse in the table, and I filled it with resin. And then like 8 seconds later, it was just like foaming up. I'm like, it's like my mouse that I...
That's my dead mouse.
That's my taxidermied mouse. He's going to be... And he's all embedded in foam now. So I had to start that project over. I learned a hard lesson. Seal everything with like one little brush coat, because it's the heat that keeps the bubbles that come out. So when the big pour of resin starts to get warm, everything that you're embedding starts to be like, oh, I'm going to like breathe my air bubbles out and then get stuck in the resin and ruin everything.
Okay, so I got to tell this story real quick. So we go to this thing in Chicago, and the three of us have been to it a couple of times, and it was like an invite-only, really cool conference thing.
Mind mesh,
and
googly.
So you're at this event. The three of us, right, are at this event with like CEOs of these big companies. There were like astrophysicists. There were just like all sorts of really smart people in us. And so we're at this thing, and the whole point of this thing is called an unconference, where everybody who attends, they show up with an idea that they want to teach everybody else about. So there's nothing planned. You just show up, and then you write down your idea on a board, and anybody that wants to go learn about beekeeping or whatever, you go learn about it from somebody who cares about it a lot. And so the list of things that are, you know, were taught at this, the couple of years, there was like how to saber a champagne bottle, and the guy brought sabers and a bunch of bottles, and inside the Google offices, they're just like smashing bottles with a sword and cutting things. Somebody did a talk about horseback archery, and somehow they got on the roof and did something with like bows and arrows, all sorts of stuff. So we're learning all this weird, crazy, disparate stuff. Jimmy comes out of a room with a dead mouse on a little thing, and is like, so excited. He's just like, look at my dead mouse. And somebody had brought a bunch of dead mice to do a taxidermy class, and he was so into it. Like, so into it.
My first and only taxidermy project.
Yeah, I just want to say, in the history of mankind, the sentence, I was at a Minecraft event with a mummified mouse that I put in a table, has never been spoken up to this moment right now.
What was that thing called? I want to say EDC. I know that's not it.
It's called OrdCamp.
OrdCamp, O-R-D, for Chicago's airport code.
We, the three of us, didn't get invited back.
I just want to... I wonder why.
Oh, I think it was COVID killed it.
I just want to touch upon... I don't know if it was frustrating, but it was actually one of my favorite videos you did of the buck knife, the automatic buck
knife. Oh, yeah. I couldn't get the buck knife. It was before I learned how to silver solder.
Was that because you just ran out of time, or it just, because I love that.
That's exactly right. The reason I ended that video is because I needed to submit a video to Make Magazine. I was on a schedule. I made 2 videos per month, and that was one of those videos where I had to like submit it the next day. And I kept trying to make these switches with regular silver, with regular solder for electrical solder, which is too soft. And these springs and these switches were under tension, and they kept not staying in place because the jolt of the switch would break the joint. And then I learned to silver solder with my sister, but I never did revisit that project. But silver solder would have been the proper way.
I think it's time to revisit it.
Thank you.
So here's
that was a project where I totally failed. I published it, and everybody appreciated the fact that the video didn't end in a positive.
I really like when makers I look up to will publish stuff to show a failure or a learning. I mean, I never say it's failure, it's always learning, but it does kind of humanize people, because I mean, you can edit whatever you want on YouTube and be like, did it on the first take, but it is nice to see that everyone runs into those hurdles, and sometimes you just have to either step away or you revisit it and you just come at it at a different angle, and you know, you eventually get to it. Another question. You often hear people say you've changed their lives. How has hearing that changed yours?
Well, my girlfriend Rachel, I often share with her the heartfelt notes that I get from people. And when I see a video that gets 30,000 views, it's like 15 of 10. We joke about that. And then, but from that video, I might get a message or just a general message from what I do and what I provide. I say, that is really the more important news, not necessarily the 10 of 10 or the 8 of 10 that Google basically reminds you. But it's those heartfelt messages that keep me wanting to keep doing it. I mean, I want to do it for me first. But when I see that, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. And it's not necessarily for views as much as it's for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it has a huge effect on me. And y'all were talking about imposter syndrome earlier. And I feel that in a lot of different ways. When it comes to like the technical stuff of making, I feel imposter syndrome, but I don't really care about it. Like, it's okay that I don't know how to do things or feel like I don't know how to do things. That's fine. When somebody says that, you know, some silly video I make or some silly podcast that I make saved their marriage or stopped them from doing harm to themselves, like that, I don't feel worthy of that. Oh. That's hard, but it's amazing too, you know? I mean, we're blessed to be in a position to have an effect even if we don't even know what that effect is gonna be. Yeah, I'm grateful for that.
That's beautiful.
I don't even know how I can say that better. I don't go to a lot of public events. I feel most comfortable at home by myself working. And so I kind of live in my own little bubble. And I make videos and I give them, I publish them, and it's meant for an audience, but I forget that there's an audience sometimes. And when you get these messages, it's like, oh man. It feels like I'm just making, like my last video, just a silly sign that I had this funny idea and I'm gonna make a silly video for it. And then when somebody says it inspired them to do something or to make their own version, I'm like, oh yeah, there's other people involved. It's just absolutely amazing. People have come up to me today and it's just said so many nice things. And like, it's hard for me to leave the house sometimes, but I am so glad I'm here because I've heard so much amazing feedback that just pushes me forward.
I think it's also really easy for me, at least, to get in that same thing where you get in your own bubble and you get in your own habits and you get in your own like routine and rhythm, and you get comfortable with what you have learned and what you are capable of, and you forget about the years ago when you weren't comfortable in making a certain thing or knowing how to do a certain thing or knowing how to express a certain thing. And you forget about the fact that you've grown so much. And so then when somebody says, you know, this early thing that you did or this current thing that you did taught me that I can too, I forget about the fact that I can have an effect on somebody's just like first step. And that's something all of us can have an effect on, is somebody being willing to try something, being willing to have the courage to share it. And that feels pretty amazing, but it's also hard to remember that when you're in your own thing. You're in your own routine, and you're just behind the YouTube studio uploading the video, and you're just thinking about all of this stuff right here. And so being reminded of people taking the first step into learning their thing and pursuing their thing is pretty amazing.
How many times, like, has somebody said, hey, you guys inspired me to start making stuff, and then they start publishing it on YouTube or Instagram, and then you go to look at their stuff, and it's so much better than anything that you have ever done, and you're like, what? How is that even possible? Like, you never made anything 5 years ago, and now you're making these incredible things. I see this all the time. These kids, I say kids, but anybody younger than me is a kid, but there's so much you can learn from the internet and YouTube and whatever. Like, they're just diving right in and going at it full throttle, and it's absolutely amazing and mind-blowing.
There's a kid, you'll probably know, kid. Make with Miles. You know,
yeah. Miles. Oh, yes.
He comes to mind.
Grow up.
Yeah, every single time a conversation like this happens, I think of him because, man, we probably met with him when he was
9, 10.
Yeah, a very young kid. And he started coming to these events, and now he's an adult.
25, maybe 22.
Yeah, like out of college, making just so creative, cool stuff. And he became a good video maker along with learning how to
very
make
successful
it's
channel.
It's so cool, because I definitely feel like an old man in regard to that. You know, like, I remember you when you were this tall. It's totally one of those, but it's also really gratifying that, you know, we got to play some tiny part in, like, in fostering that kid, like, just trying to make some stuff. And then he started making awesome stuff, and it's very cool.
So I guess I have a question that kind of touches upon that. What would you tell episode one versions of you what you've learned along the way? What stuff have you learned through 1 to 500, and how has that changed you in that sense of this journey of 500 episodes and 500 builds and 500 things you've learned?
Well,
one thing, you know, we often talk about running out of ideas and stuff. And the fact that we have made 500 episodes of a podcast without an idea every time is proof that you will not run out of ideas.
We are the Seinfeld of podcasts.
You know how many times we've heard, me and Dave have heard Bob go, well, let's just get started. Yeah. Let's just jump in.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we hear. Hey, everybody. That's like the second people, hey, everybody. Yeah, Bob go, well, let's just get started. And then on my screen, I see 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then Bob jumps in. But it's always preceded with, well, let's just jump in.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to come up with an idea, and then, you know, I think the point being that if you just show up, stuff happens, you know, especially when you're with people, like-minded people, and people that you have in a community that can encourage you. If you just show up, ideas will come, inspiration will come, community and support will come.
And the little problems that we all don't anticipate ever saying out loud comes out. All the time. Like, we don't think we have a topic, and all of a sudden we're both talking about, well, the three of us are talking about whatever it is. You know, splintered wood or bent bandsaw blades or whatever it comes up, or just taxes or other junk that we don't want to talk about.
Yeah. I think that thing you were talking about earlier about, like, being in your own shop and just being in your own space, it's easy to think that some of the thoughts around it, the thinking behind it, the emotions that go with making stuff is just, well, that's just part of that quiet space. It's part of that thing. And I think I didn't expect when we got started that it would turn into a place for us to be able to dump those things to each other. And then to hear other people, like today, some people have said, you know, the same therapy session thing that we say to each other, that it's like therapy for them. I think truthfully, I don't really think about you all when we're recording. No offense or anything. But I... It really is just the three. In fact, this is kind of weird because I have to look left and right to see them. Yeah. And we're usually just like this. Like this is, you know.
I want to move all the chairs so we're just or put you up on my computer.
Well, that's what we should have done. Yeah. We all have laptops looking just next there.
When we don't record podcasts for the audience. We don't think of like, oh, the audience wants to hear this. We record podcasts because this is something that's on our minds right now, which is why I think not having a topic sometimes works, because what we're really thinking about actually comes out in that episode.
And I love sometimes the topic just meanders. All of a sudden we're talking about flat tires and we started talking about inspiration or something.
Yeah, but I don't think we planned that. I think when we started, like it was like, yeah, we're going to talk about what we're making and try to be useful. Honestly, I was leaning on Jimmy to like give a bunch of useful hints for the podcast because I feel like he had the most to offer when it came to like, you know, the technical whatever. And then, so I didn't expect the fact that over this time it would become more of a friendship, being able to trust each other and open up about what's going on. And as far as like the project stuff, you know, I think it's taken me, like growth and stuff over time, it's taken me a really long time to figure out. I mean, I've been doing this full time for like 10 years. It's taken me a long time to figure out which part of all of the projects and the video and the pursuit of all these different things that we do, which parts are actually the parts I care the most about. Because we do a lot of things. We do a lot of social media. We do a lot of YouTube. We do a lot of whatever. But a lot of it is just a necessary part of the job, right? Part of the marketing and stuff. And so it's taken me, I thought starting this that it was about me trying to help other people along by sharing, you know, the details of what I figured out along the way and trying to uncover the hidden things of making. And I think that's still there. But I learned over a long period of time about the problem-solving thing in me, is that I'm trying to find solutions for things. And that's the part that I really care about. That's the part that if I had started with that in mind, I think I would have had a different, you know, 10 years. But I don't really know where I was going with that, other than like it's what I thought I was doing is very different than what I've actually done. But I'm really glad to be where I am with that.
Well, just to get back to the beginning of the impetus for this, I talked about it before, but we three were in a comment section on Facebook 11 years ago, and Jeff Duro, who's a fan, who's not here, he's out west, Jeff Duro said in the comment section, why don't you three do a podcast together? And all the other commenters were like, yeah, that would be great. Oh, I would love to hear that. And that was the push. And then the three of us spoke privately.
It was like the Spider-Man meme where all like, you in? Like, me? Yeah. You? Me? I don't know.
And then we texted privately, and I don't even know, we hadn't even met at that point in person. We just knew each other online. And Bob, you might have said, well, let's just record an episode. If it stinks, no one ever needs to hear it. And we just fade into the distance like we never saw that chat section. And we recorded it, and here we are. And then the first episode, I remember being like, or whatever, the first few episodes, I remember being like, boy, wouldn't it be great to learn how to laser cut? Because you guys are a little technically more advanced than me. I don't even know if I was CNCing, or maybe I just got a CNC at the time, and you guys were getting free X tools. I was like, how come I'm not getting a free X tool? And like, it's like these guys may as well have like soloed flight airplanes as far as what I was concerned when it came to like lasering and CNCing. But obviously, you know, we've all matured in many different ways over the years.
I remember when we first started the podcast, I like things to be very structured, and I'm like, well, we got to have an intro part, what we're working on, a topic, and I thought, you know, there should be little bumpers in between with music. I'm glad none of that happened, and we still have the different sections, but it's just kind of free form.
Every time I hear the podcast, because I don't listen to it that much, but it pops up in my player because it's in my feed. And I hear, and then I hear Bob's voice. I'm like, oh, I don't want to listen to this.
These guys are awful.
I die for my phone, but I hear that.
It's just a chord going through an arpeggio. If anybody knows that chord, we'll give you a free sticker.
We'll give you a used question right here. No, and I think because of your dynamic, it does make it feel like three friends talking to you out of the gate. Like, when I first started listening, it was just like, oh, this is my new favorite podcast, the first episode I listened to. So, it's again, I just want to thank you for doing what you do. And yes?
Finn? No, go on.
Okay.
Go on.
No,
go
and
on.
I
tell
hope,
me more.
And I hope
stop.
We can host.
Stop.
I hope we can host Making It 1000.
Are we done with all the questions?
Well, I was going to say.
Can anyone? I just say real quick?
Yeah.
You have been a great host all day.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. That means a lot coming from you guys. I look up to you guys as makers and as people I fully respect. So it means quite a lot. So
thank you, brother.
I'm trying to make Jimmy cry again.
Not hard. Oh, we can make him cry.
Yeah,
let's go.
Good.
We can
Jimmy,
do
let's get deep. Let's get no. Do we have any any other questions? I can run around in the audience if we want to. Right in the middle. All right, here we go.
Jacob,
right in the middle. Want to pass the mic? Don't say anything inappropriate.
Anything inappropriate? So you guys always say that you wouldn't do it without the Patreon members. Sorry, I'm going to cry. If there's any Patreon members here, will you please stand up so I can thank you, because it means a lot to me. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Thank you all.
That's amazing.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate all of you, and I'm sure there's people here that or aren't here that would like to say thank you as well. So without you guys, they always say it wouldn't be possible. So
thank you, Jacob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob.
Oh. This is my mom, by the way.
We were the 100. And somebody was walking around and saying, what do you make? What do you make? Anyway, they were all saying different things. Somebody came up to me and said, what do you make? And I do make several things. And I said, well, I make Bob.
Mic drop.
And thank you for that.
And then my husband said, I helped.
That is a true story, by the way. She did do that.
Hit your shop assistant. Do we have any other questions? We have a question over here. Want to pass the mic down?
Andrew.
Hey, thanks for everything you've done over the years. It means a lot. You all work with cars a little bit. This isn't a very deep question. But nobody has a Lyft. Is there, like, why... Heaven.
Why don't we have a Lyft? I need a Lyft. And every time I'm under the car, Rob's like, why don't we just go get a Lyft on Facebook Market? We've been talking about it. I don't work at the shop downtown too much these days, but Rob and Keith from Blackthorn Concepts now lives in my neighborhood, and together we started it. This is the very beginning. Rob started a chat called East Durham Speed Shop, and we're going to put a Lyft in the old shop because there's plenty of room, and maybe start building some hot rods. I don't know. That's a possibility. But you're right. Like, everything bubbles to the surface. When I got my first laser, when I got my first this and that and so on, and that's like, this is bubbling to the consciousness right now.
Actually, it's a little bit deeper for me than you might think. There's an imposter syndrome wrapped up in getting a Lyft. I have had my finger on the button to buy a Lyft several times. And I don't really have room for it, but I could make room for it. But there's part of me that is like, if I buy that thing, then I'm absolutely committing more than I've already committed to try to work on cars, which I feel really, really inadequate at. And so, yeah, I mean, that's probably the push that I need, honestly, if like that commitment to do something, like I could get better at this, you know, but I think that's why, is I just don't feel qualified, you know?
Get it.
And it's expensive, but...
I just haven't bought it yet. I'm not worried about that.
Pretty soon you're going to have 10 lifts.
Yeah, he's going to have 10 lifts.
I'm waiting for a free one.
I am easily influenced, and I thought
get
I was going
lift,
to...
Get a lift.
I thought I was going to enjoy working on cars. I see you guys working on cars. I see other people working on cars. And I thought I was going to enjoy it too. And I didn't. And so...
I think, Dave, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you just need to be inspired for by a particular body style or a particular year. You know, like...
Maybe so, yeah.
You know, I think there's a particular car out there that's going to really get your goat, and then you'll be like, I'm into that car.
I would also need my wife Kelly's permission to park whatever car I'm working
Kelly,
in
would you
in
like
her spot.
Everybody, she's right there. Everybody ask her for permission, and then we'll peer pressure her into letting it happen.
So, yes, I sold the Impala. It's in a better home. It's actually getting worked on right now properly. So,
thank you. Great answers.
Say thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
We have a question over here. Jimmy, this super fan here said, could you move the card a little bit to get a group photo? All right, we have a question over here.
So in the category of dream projects, harkening back to an earlier conversation, not projects that you're running from, not projects that you're still putting off. If budget and shop logistics was not a question, not an issue, what's the dream project?
Building a house.
Yeah, I think that's my answer too. But I'll go one step further. So I would love
restoring
to
restoring a house.
I would love to, buying a house with a graveyard next to it and then put it.
That is no, no. Hold on, you do, and then I'm gonna say my answer.
Okay, so I plan on eventually building an A-frame cabin, but I think if the no money, no problem, you know, just anything, it would be an A-frame with like an underground Star Wars room thing in it. So it's not, you know, it's like fancy Airbnb upstairs, and then you go downstairs and you're like, what? I want that reaction. So
I wish we could put that picture that's in our text chain on this thing right now. Is it possible?
Can I text a picture to somebody and have it shown up here?
You guys are going to get blown away when you see this picture.
What? I just have a microphone.
All right, we'll try it. Groz, we'll text you a picture if you can get it up on there. Put it through the group. Maybe Nick knows what to do.
Yeah.
My dream project would be to own a junkyard. Dave gave me that idea the other day. There's one for sale in Freehold that's 10 miles from my house. 40 acres of oil. You guys really put the bug in my brain with that.
I don't know what my answer to that is, because I think my answer is going to change month to month. I think I've been talking to some other people lately, but I like the idea of building an environment instead of one single thing, a bunch of things that work together, like trying to build all the furniture in a room. Like, I build a lot of furniture that's in our house now, but they're all built separately and not with the thought of they're all supposed to work together. So just more of cohesive pieces that work together that create an environment. Thank you.
Hi, long-time listener, first-time audience member. If you guys were on death row, what would be your last meal?
No.
But Dave, wouldn't Dave. You be... Okay, hang on. Wouldn't you be disappointed if your last meal and somebody brings out a taco and you take a bite and you're like, why have I not been eating these my entire life?
To the five people that don't know, all of our girlfriends, Dave never ate a taco in his life, and he won't.
He will. There's a plan, right?
Yeah, yes. When we hit 1 million subscribers, I'm going to eat my first taco.
Tell your friends.
I get asked so many times, how have you never had a taco? And we grew up in a small town, so there weren't like lots of restaurants to go to. And no diss on my parents, but you know, it was kind of like take care of yourself. So who is calling me right now? My parents. And so, you know, I just ate a lot of mac and cheese and bologna sandwiches.
Oh, my God,
and
that's it. Me too.
I just never had a taco, and I didn't realize it was a weird thing. And then I was having a conversation with my coworker when I was in my 30s, and I was like, yeah, I've never had a taco. And it just blew his mind. He's like, how have you never had a taco? And then it's now my identity. I've never had a taco.
And it's the meme for our group chat. It's
yeah,
the symbol.
Yeah, yeah. It is the icon for our group chat. My death row meal would be fried chicken and mashed potatoes.
Ooh. You don't have to have one entree in that meal, right? You can have like whatever you want. Okay. Giant filet mignon, like the biggest one possible, and an entire multi-meat deep dish pizza from Chicago, and a peach milkshake.
Mine would be an overcooked 2-day-old pepperoni pizza from Stewart's gas station. Right, Derek? It's the best with a Coke Zero.
What? Yeah. You gotta take advantage of the calories, man. Come on.
That is. That
it's
is.
Like you're about to die. You can have anything you want.
Maybe ice cream after that.
Okay.
Vanilla.
All right, we've already seen DiResta mows the lawn. We've seen Pesciuto mows the lawn. When are we going to see Claggett mow the lawn?
That's probably never back. Because I have kids that mow my lawn.
No, I see. We need to see Bob's lawnmower mow the lawn while Bob sits at the computer controlling it. That's what we need.
That's, yeah. So, Tom's here somewhere. That's his thing.
That goes way back when you could make a silly video and it wouldn't hurt your channel.
We all made various, it was like me, you, and Steve, and Mateus. We all made like lawnmower videos.
Yeah. If I did that now, I would get so many unsubscribes.
The algorithm would basically spit you out the back.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd take your star off your belly.
This guy just gave up.
So, you had touched on episode 1. Versions of yourselves, looking back on that, rather, if you had anything to say to episode 1000 versions of yourselves, looking forward, what would you say to yourselves here and now?
We would all be AI figures, like cut up, young with dark hair, and we'd be like shrimps in a wheelchair somewhere, controlling that meme. At least I would be. These guys are 10 years younger than me.
Shrimps in a wheelchair? So weird. I hope, I guess what I'm telling myself for the future, I hope that you didn't settle into things and stayed interested and pursued things. I don't want to settle in my next years as I get older. And I hope you spend a lot of time with the kids. That's what I would say.
These ideas that you had during 500, make them. Don't let them become dream projects. Just go ahead and make them.
What would I tell myself? To keep pursuing interesting, clever projects that excite you. And I don't think I'll stop. I mean, I don't see any reason why I would stop. So I would just basically keep doing the same thing I'm doing, but maybe amp it up to keep it fun and interesting.
I couldn't imagine you settling in or like stopping the way that you are at all. I can see, I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, I could see a lot of people, myself included, it would be really easy to get comfortable and to settle in to like, well, this, I'm going to do less and I'm going to be okay with this. But that is not Jimmy DiResta. That seems like the furthest thing from,
threshold of pain keeps increasing. So that's like, I did the car.
Yeah.
And then I did, you know, I'm doing the polls. Now I'm doing the house. Forget about it. Like I said, now my goal is to get halfway done, not to get done. My goal is to get halfway done. 2055, halfway done.
We got a question over here. Mine's more of a statement is that I wanted to, or a question for the audience is that my imposter syndrome is because of you guys, right? Because I'm surrounded by people that do such an amazing work, and I go and I watch a video, I'm like, I could do that, but why would I? Because they did such a good job, right? So I thank you for that, actually, because you probably saved me from thousands of failed projects.
I think there's no reason, any of us should be on the stage right now. I think anybody here could have their own podcast and be on the stage. And so it's just, we've built an audience and we have a voice, and I don't even know, I don't feel like I deserve that voice sometimes. But I think anybody here could be in my spot on the stage speaking about what they've done and what they want to do and what they could do. Mm-hmm.
In your own ways, Jimmy, I want to address this to Jimmy and just tell him too that I don't know how many people there are here that this is true for, but obviously there's a lot of Patreon members here for a lot of the different makers. But 12, 13, 14 years ago, my father got sick and spent 6 months hell in the hospital, and I had to stay with him because the care was bad. I wouldn't have survived that without the makers that were doing it at the time. And that's how we got to be friends, as I walked up and said, dude, you saved my life.
Oh, thank you, brother.
And I don't know how many more people here there are, but sometimes there's tough things to get through, and it's great to watch your friends do stuff.
Thank you.
And then turn you into, I can't make that.
Thank you, whew. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a good question. Do we have any more questions? All right, we got a couple more. We have time for a couple more questions, and then it will be...
And we have to do a short after show, because we always do that for the Patreon supporters, so yeah, it'll be short.
So anybody not a Patreon member has to leave?
Get out.
So I think we all know that Jimmy wanted to be a TV star, but for Bob and David,
being a YouTuber, was it anticipated, or how have you dealt with becoming sort of famous?
Okay, you're not supposed to say this. I enjoy the attention. I really do. I enjoy it in my home. I don't... It's kind of rare, but once in a while I'll be at Home Depot, or just the other day I was at the grocery store and somebody's just like, I love your videos. And it's so weird, and I, for some reason, I don't know how to talk anymore. But I got into it because I wanted to gain an audience, and I wanted the fame, and I'm thankful for it. So, I don't know. Maybe you're not supposed to say you enjoy that part, but I do.
I think it's okay to say that. I mean, if it's the truth, you know. I think for me, I didn't expect to be recognized anywhere. I didn't ever think it was going to get this far, honestly. But the whole idea of any level of fame makes me pretty uncomfortable. And not people. I love people. I love the one-on-one conversations that we've had today. And I love having relationship with people, with persons. Let me say it that way. People, it's a different kind of thing that I was never really expecting, and so not terribly comfortable with, you know, volume. But I am super grateful that the fact that a group of people is made of persons, and so each one of those persons is an opportunity to get to know somebody or to hear about them or whatever. So, and I don't think that would happen as easily if I didn't have a platform to have some sort of recognition, which, again, I don't feel like I deserve, but I'm really grateful for that, you know, that reason to connect with people. So.
One perk of being famous, when you go on Facebook Market, right, Rob? We're always like, I don't think they know me. I don't think they know. Oh, this guy knows me. All right, cool. I can make a deal through Facebook, send the guy some swag, say, hold the call for me. So the other day, I messaged somebody about this cool new Jeep. You guys don't even know about it. And a 71 Jeep Gladiator.
The after show. We're going to find out more in the after show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I messaged the guy, and he's like, Jimmy. And I'm like, and then it turns out the guy has been to my house with a mutual friend. And then I sent him my message. I sent him my phone. I said, text me. He texted me. We had a whole text chain going in 2022 on my phone. So I know. So. That's a perk. Is when I Facebook market somebody when I'm trying to buy junk and they know me, and it makes the transaction go a lot easier. So.
I'm gonna tell you a little story that there's no really reason to tell, but it was fun. Last night we get to the hotel, so he's in the lobby, there are a few people are hanging out and stuff, and I walk in to give him a hug, and we're talking, and then I go up to check into the hotel, and so I'm like standing in the line looking at the thing, and this guy kind of glances over, and I'm expecting all of you all to be in the area, right? So I'm like, oh, it's like somebody that's here for the thing, and you can always tell when somebody's like, so this guy's doing this. And so he walks over and he's like, hey, are you Bob from I Like to Make Stuff? I'm like, yeah, cool. Nice to meet you. Are you here for the thing? He's like, what thing? And then, and as he says that, Jimmy walks over and he goes, Jimmy DiResta? What is happening right now? And it was awesome. It was so awesome because this guy came up with his wife to go to a concert tomorrow and they were just like checking into a hotel and he was like, I watch both of your videos all the time.
You got
and he
a double
was
like, banger.
It was awesome.
Hi, I'm a teacher and a maker from South Korea, and I'm here for an international student, and I was so inspired by the stories that you have told us, and this is the first event that I have found related to maker community and maker education like that, because I'm so into maker education. And the thing that I want to ask for you is that, have you made something with your children?
Have I made something for the children?
With your children.
Yes. So a little bit, not as much as I would like, but during COVID, I have four kids, and they were all home, obviously. And so I decided to try to make a little course, like a shop course, you know, for young kids. And so we made a birdhouse together, and I did an episode on like safety and taught them what the tools were, and then we just made a little simple birdhouse together. And that was really, really special, because one of the problems that I have as a parent and somebody that works at home is that I try to do my work while my kids are at school so that I don't miss them when they're at home, you know. But that makes it so that I can't do my work with them ever. And so that was a little moment in time where everybody was home. That was the thing I liked about that period in our world, is that everybody was facing each other in my home for the first time in a long time. And being able to take advantage of that and just make a simple birdhouse with them and get video evidence of it that we can like have forever, like that was very special. Other than that, no.
But you are making music with your daughter?
Yes, my daughter is a musician, and she writes music and sings and plays instruments, and so I am getting to help record her music and help like produce it and stuff, which is also amazing.
If you've watched Making Fun, Jimmy doesn't like kids.
Okay, I see.
It's funny, my kids have met Jimmy many times, and when that show came out, it was funny because I would talk to other friends' kids, and they were like, is he really like that? And so when we're watching it at home, one of my sons was like, he's not like that. And like he was like, I know that guy. He's not like that at all.
Okay, then I have another question. Can I ask you? Yeah, okay, thank you. So that is, actually I'm a part of a non-profit organization regarding maker education, and I did some volunteer works for about six years like that. And when it comes to maker community, what is the most important value that you think?
The most important value, I think, is commitment to your mission. I see so many people begin and so carelessly give up. I think it's really important to stick to. It's one of the things I say is make something every day and always finish what you start. Because we see so many people begin projects and just abandon them either out of insecurity or money or just general, I shouldn't say that. Just because they give up. I was going to say out of mental sloppiness, but I think I think it's important to stick to it. And I think that's, even if I know for my own self, if I lose center on a project or if I lose ambition on a project, I still grind through it so that I look back and go, I'm glad I did that. By leaving it, and if it sits around, if it's a big project you can't just get rid of in the woods and it sits around, and you're like, ugh. Every day you walk by and it's like, you didn't finish me, you know? But I don't let that happen. And I think it's a really important thing to teach kids is to finish everything you start.
He said it so well. I think going along with finish what you start is not worrying about trying to make everything perfect, like the previous podcast was saying, and just push through. And when the reason there is a community of makers is to just give each other encouragement to do the things and to share the things. Like, and Jimmy said it so well. Yeah,
I think to piggyback on that, the highest value of the maker community is the fact that it's a community, in my opinion, is the fact that most of us won't be able to do all the different skills. And so it's a good thing that we're a community, because we can rely on each other to teach each other, to learn, to collaborate, to have somebody help you out, to make something for you. And there's a lot of other, you know, communities that where that like doesn't even make sense. Like it doesn't make sense to collaborate in certain ways, but when it comes to us making things, it almost makes more sense to collaborate than to try to do everything yourself, unless you can. So I think that, like, you know, knowing that you're getting into a community of people that are like-minded and want to share and want to support each other, I think is one of the biggest values that I've gotten out of being a part of this community, but also it's one of the things that I think everybody can contribute, you know.
Oh, I thought you left.
Hey, guys. So what do you guys listen to on Friday morning?
The podcast that I listen to, I listen to Marc Maron. I listen to Sam Morrell and Sam and Mark. Are We Drunk Yet? Does anybody know that? We Might Be Drunk, yeah, the comedy podcast. I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts. And I listen to This American Life. I listen to The Terry Gross Show. What is the name of The Terry Gross Show? Fresh Air. That's how I learn about books that I'm never going to read. I figured I listened to the interview. I'm like, I got it. Got it. I love Terry Gross. I've been listening to Terry Gross for probably 30 years.
I don't even have a podcast player on my phone. I don't listen to podcasts, but if they are in video form, I'll have them up on a TV while I'm doing stuff. And they're really, most of them, all of them are not maker related. I like kind of comedy podcasts, like Tosh.0 right now is one of my favorites. He cracks
me up.
Oh,
yeah, I listen to Tosh.0. I listen, there's a few other maker, I mean, I listen to Paul's podcast, that's why I invited him. And there's a couple of others, and I just can't remember the names, but I know what they are.
I don't really listen to podcasts anymore. I used to. The one that I listen to is because, I understand, two of my good friends are doing the podcast. So it's No Dumb Questions with Matt and Destin.
Yep.
And they're both, yeah.
Dave Bauer is in the house. Dave, where are you? I listen to Dave's podcast.
No Dumb Questions is like, they're two of my friends that we all, the three of us, they talk to each other a lot. But each one of them and I have a hard time catching up. And so it's the same kind of thing where, like, I listen to their podcast. They're like, oh, what are my friends up to? You know, and then apparently on one of the episodes, I got roped into being in a barbershop quartet with the two of them or something like that. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. We're here with Pat Lapp.
Hey.
Hi, Pat. How you doing?
Good.
All the way from Canada.
Whoop, yep. Whoop.
Alors moi, je voudrais savoir, ça serait quoi votre...
Hold on, wait. Ask the question. Slower. Rachel can interpret.
Oh, Rachel is speaking French?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm fucked now. Yeah, I was just goofing around, guys. You know, that's what I'm good at. So, yeah, just come.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, bud.
All right, well, do we have time for one more question? I see over here, Wim. Is that Wim? I can't see. Okay, there we go. Oh, Pat, you could have just carried the mic. This thing's getting heavy. All right, we got time for one more.
Make it good. So back when this all kind of got started, everyone would say, thank you for the 10 out of 10. Appreciate it, Paul. Everyone would say, oh, I could do that too if I had $10,000 worth of tools. And because of you three specifically, I now have over $10,000
worth of tools. Can you do it?
I can't.
Proof. It's proof that you can't.
Cannot do it with $10,000 worth of tools. But I'm curious, in this room, because I'm always wondering how many tools have been bought because of you three. Who else in this room has bought tools because of them? Go ahead and stand up. Anybody?
Where's my commission?
$10,000. This is crazy. You guys are responsible for millions of dollars in tool sales.
But yet, we still rely on the patrons, so thank you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
My bank account doesn't show
and,
that.
And thank you guys, because I now cannot make things with lots of tools.
So for the record, does anybody remember on the last episode, you may have listened to it this morning, when I was talking about the guy at Making It 100 that was acting like he was drunk and made me really uncomfortable and then wasn't? That's him. That's Wim. He's awesome.
He also, I remember being at Making It 100, and when he discovered the podcast, because he's IT, and he thought the IT for Making It was IT.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, no, this is a really cool podcast. And then he just started getting into it.
It's like a whole new market we haven't gone after.
So that pretty much wraps up the main portion of Making It. So if everyone could give them a hand. Truly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Hold on.
Smile.